Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter. Hey Watchers, it's Nyan, and thank you for joining us for another round of useless and irrational opinions on the Watch OK Please podcast. This week, Dan and I hold a co-op meeting to give Jason our feedback on the show Only Murders in the Building, which is available on Hulu. As a reminder, Jason's proposed watch order was the first three episodes of Season 1. This week's episode is not brought to you by Jeff Goldblum. He didn't give us any money to say this, but since he appears in pretty much every commercial nowadays, we thought it might be good to encourage you guys to watch every commercial he's in. He seems like a great guy and is definitely a fun actor, so check out Jeff Goldblum, probably on your TV right now. If you're digging this podcast, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or just let us know via our social media pages. And if you got a show or movie you want us to watch, or just something you want us to randomly mention on air, leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. Finally, have you tried subscribing? I hear it's great. So, in summary, watch, listen, rate, and subscribe, please. All right, watchers, let's get ready to turn those dips into a full-on meal.
Hey, listeners, this is Jason, and I'm here to get feedback on Only Murders in the Building. I gave Dan and Nyan the assignment to watch episodes 1 to 3. As a little note, while this episode airs, episode 4 of season 2 should be dropping on Hulu right now. So, Dan, Nyan, I'm dying to know, what did you guys think of Only Murders in the Building?
I love this reboot of Three Amigos. I'm so glad they didn't bring in Chevy, because he sounds like a real pain. But
yeah, no, that would see if they brought in Chevy, it would be more like Funny Farm in my mind.
Oh, there you go. No, it's funny because I specifically avoided this for the longest time. And I think I literally told Kate, I knew I'd like it. I just wasn't interested. Those are my exact words randomly after a beer or two and watching this. But yeah, I really ended up enjoying this quite a bit. And it's not just because the title of the series kind of sounds like a Jay-Z lyric. Like I could easily be like, your man Hove's Only Murders in the Building. This just works. I mean, damn, before going into further detail, what do you think?
No, I totally agree. I totally enjoy this. I'm glad this did not turn out into Fletch Lives either. Fletch does not live in this continuity, I think. Yeah, no. In all seriousness, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I actually went to episode 4, actually. And I do fully intend, you know, time permitting, to go finish off the season for sure. And I'm desperate to get to the scene that Nyan saw before anything else at the end.
Oh, I'm going to avoid spoilers as much as I can. Also, it's easy for me to do because I don't remember it that well. Like all I remember is how it connects to the first episode, and I'll stop because I'll end up spoiling something. But
that's great. Yeah, no, I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know. Like I said before, I haven't seen Selena in a lot of different things, and I was like thinking, okay, so but beat her like Jason was kind of portraying being kind of the straight, you know, kind of character out of the three of them, I think it really played well because you really got to see the different crazy creative mind coming from Martin Short. And then you also got to see basically this kind of closeted, introverted, almost actor in Steve's character. So I thought it was really neat to kind of have that set up. And I was actually very surprised by that dynamic.
I actually have to ask, I forget if I asked this during the pitch, but I don't think I've ever heard Selena Gomez speak. Because I've never seen any of the shows.
I heard you mention that, yeah, during the pitch.
Is that her normal speaking voice? Because it's delightful. Like, just that deadpan is awesome. I love the way she delivers everything.
It's more deadpan. So the only thing I know of her from is Castle Transylvania.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Castlevania? I forget what
Hotel Transylvania, I think. Video game.
Yeah, you know, the one with Adam Sandler.
Hotel Transylvania.
Hotel, that's it. Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah.
So I know her from that, and I would say her voice is pretty similar. You know, it's a cartoon, so they animate her like face a little more. because, you know, her eyes are just staring and, you know, I don't think she blinks most of the time. So, but yeah, I mean, that's her voice. And it is, it's wow. pretty memorable, right?
Yeah, yeah. It definitely stands out. I appreciated the first episode with kind of the intro to the characters and her approach to true crime and podcasts in general reminds me a lot of what my experience with people who like true crime podcasts, in that it's a bit obsessive.
And yes. Yes.
It's intense because just as a little bit of a tangent, but what I think I've told folks before, my wife is really into true crime podcasts. She's not obsessive mm-hmm. about them, but she follows quite a number of them. She gets into them. But what I did once with her was back when pre-pandemic, we were still hanging out, was I went to a live taping at the Wilbur Theater in Boston of My Favorite Murder. I don't know if, are you guys familiar with this podcast?
I feel no. like I've never heard the name of it. I think you might have mentioned that you were going to this at one point.
Oh, probably. So it's incredibly popular. I'm pretty sure it was number one at some point for an extended period of time. That both the hosts make a ton of money off of it. It's ridiculously popular. I went because I was trying to be a supportive then boyfriend.
Right.
And we've been to tons of shows at the Wilbur Theater. We have a routine. We'd go to hit up the Thai restaurant, Montien, across the street, do our thing. Yeah, yeah. We know the ins and outs of the Wilbur. So it's pretty smooth. What I've never encountered at going to a show at the Wilbur Theater is when I'm at dinner at the Thai restaurant across the street, random groups of people being like, are you here for the My Favorite Murder taping? Oh my God, I'm a murder reno too. And everyone in the restaurant is going to the show and wants to be each other's friends. It's real weird and creepy. And it was, and that's fine. But honestly, when we got inside, I think people forgot they weren't listening to a podcast. Well, they thought they were listening to a podcast in their own living room. What they didn't realize was that they were in a theater. So they would have conversations while they're taping the podcast. Oh, and I'm like, what? This is insane. Like, you've spent so much money to be here to watch these podcasters talk. And now you're just going to have random conversations. This feels worse than a movie theater somehow.
Yeah.
Because you've spent the extra effort.
I totally agree with that.
The intense obsession that folks have is insane. Between My Favorite Murder, True Crime Obsessed, A Date with Dateline, all these like random true crime podcasts are insane. And the people who follow them tend to be pretty intense.
So now I want to hear Ned Flanders say, hey, Murderino.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, no. It's wild that, again, to think that, you know, there is so much of a reality kind of steeped in with the characterizations of people in the show. It's kind of wild.
I think the only divergence is that at the My Favorite Murder taping, it seemed to be only white women there with their friends. I don't think there were any. I was the one of two men in the audience. It was very weird.
That's hilarious.
And that's weird. I wouldn't have thought of that from a true crime. You know, not that women wouldn't be interested in it, but I don't understand why it would be exclusive to white women. You know, I would think these true crime podcasts appeal to all sorts of people. That's sort of
random. I would have to be the same mindset.
You would think, but I'm pretty sure that there is definitely like 90% of true crime podcasts, primarily white women. And happy to go on the record saying that. And please prove me wrong.
Can we... It is really possibly weird. Get like a kind of a sub psychographic of ones that of people there who own cats versus people who own dogs and how obsessive they are with them.
I'm sure we get that breakdown. That's got to be out there somewhere.
Yeah. So it's funny you talk about this, and you do get some of that with the main characters, but later on in the season, sort of podcast obsession is a theme that comes up a few times. Gotcha. With people just being totally obsessed with these true crime podcasts. So it's funny that you actually got to go to one of these podcasts. I think part of the appeal of, obviously people love true crime, whole channels. Isn't there like literally a channel called True Crime?
Yes.
Yeah. Like who doesn't love true crime? But I think with podcasts, there's a certain obsession because it feels that much more relatable. Like, you know, if you love Friends, great. You can talk about it with people, but you never expect you're going to go see Courtney Cox or David Schwimmer in real life, right? Or, you know, some other TV show. Whereas a podcast, you're like, oh, it's just a few people chatting, right? I could totally go out and, you know, you could, as you said, you can go to the Wilbur Theater and actually see it being recorded live and be that close to it. So I don't know. I'm just sort of obsessed with why people get obsessed with things. And it is true that like people just get so obsessed with things like podcasts.
Have you met Star Wars fans? I'm sorry.
Fair point.
To me, like, I mean, I think the writing and the dialogue on this in here was like very much on point as well. I really liked how tight some of it was. There were some scenes that, you know, that obviously, you know, it's very interesting to see kind of the flashbacks with the person, the murderee, the person who was murdered. It's spoiler time, so we're just going to say his name, Tim. And it was very interesting to see that, basically. And I really loved a lot of, like, the little kind of things that they tucked in, you know, with the lines and whatnot. And I'm majorly appreciative of all the references to everything from theater to some puns in there. So I definitely appreciated all of that a lot.
Yeah, the writing, I agree, was on point. The performance, Martin Short probably, I don't know, it was a toss-up between him and Selena Gomez in terms of which one I preferred more. Steve Martin, I'm trying to turn around on. I don't know what happened. I appreciated him earlier in life, and then he just seemed to get curmudgeonly after a while. He does a great job here. I'm just still not completely sold yet. Maybe I'm probably going to continue this. So I think by the end of this, I'll probably fall back in love with him. That's probably going to happen.
I'm anxious to see what you say about him after you see episode 4.
Oh,
yeah. And that's kind of his character in this show is, you know, he's certainly curmudgeonly in real life, supposedly based on stories we've all heard. But that's also the character he plays in this show, which I think works for him because he's kind of curmudgeonly. And so he plays this curmudgeon who hasn't like lived with anyone in 28 years and things like that. And, you know, I think that incredible loneliness in this character really works in the show and it adds something to it. And it gives something for Martin Short and Selena Gomez to play off of.
Right. Yeah.
I can definitely see that.
And when you're speaking of like the good writing, like I made a couple notes of funny lines I liked because there were some good. And I feel like Martin Short got the best lines in general.
Yes.
Like, yeah, the best one, my favorite one was when he was critiquing Steve Martin's performance filming the podcast. Mm. And he goes, it was like a Ken Burns documentary on the history of boredom.
Yes. Oh, that was a great one. That was a great one. Yeah.
I actually had one from him too, because you're right. He did have the best lines. And I think part of me was the lawyer in me who enjoyed this more. But when they're at the funeral service for Tim in the lobby, at some point they're recording someone and he just says, do you consent to be recording, to be recorded? Just say anything to agree.
He goes, no, I do not. No, I do not. Perfect. Click.
Exactly. It was brilliant.
Yeah,
between that and the chorus line like thing in episode 3,
the chorus line thing, and then later like doing things a la Cell Block Tango from Chicago.
I missed that completely.
Well, good, because the whole point is that they have them lined up in a row, just like in Chicago with the Cell Block Tango, and so that's why I really kind of dug that, because like, you know, that's one of the most iconic songs you hear now. Also, I'm hearing Cicero, Lipschitz. You know, and that's all I'm like hearing after that. It was a lot of fun. And oh yeah, and my other line was great. What was it? Actually, it happened in the same scene when they were talking with a critique of the podcast recording. Steve Martin says, "Do we have to do this in the closet?" And then Martin says, "Now you sound like Patti LuPone."
That was pretty great.
I was dying.
That was awesome.
I think I had to pause it at that point because I just needed a moment.
I mean, and they spread it out in terms of the great lines, because then Sting has a great line where he says, "Don't stand so close to me." And the elevator. I was like, "That's brilliant, absolutely brilliant."
Yeah, there's definitely more Sting puns coming down for you.
Excellent! I can't wait.
So yeah, there's some great stuff. I mean, I think. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of, you know, really neat kind of things that they have, like the 212 productions bit in episode 3, which I thought was great because, you know, not everyone might remember or know that. I mean, three of us obviously know that 212 is like the main NY Manhattan area code, obviously. So there's a lot of things like tucked in like that in there, which was great. And Hardy Boys, of all things, being referenced.
Oh, right.
Oh, I was going to ask if you guys knew who the Hardy Boys are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I remember the Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys like of mysteries course. From back in the day. I didn't read them a ton, but I read one or two.
Yeah, Sam.
We must be like at the tail end of people who get that reference.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sure my kids 100%. Have no idea. And obviously, that's a theme because they're like, how could Selena Gomez's character possibly know who the Hardy Boys are?
Right. Well, the CW did do that Nancy Drew show.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they did a Nancy Drew show.
And I think the Hardy Boys show up in that. Am I wrong? I watched like an episode or two. Right?
I never watched it. But I remember the South Park, of course, did a parody of the Hardy Boys.
I probably wasn't watching at that point.
Okay, so this was basically they were tied into the episode of South Park where they were trying to find who really caused 9/11.
Mm.
And they're called the Hardy Boys, and they're kind of portrayed as this kind of less than ambiguously gay duo. Oh, and like they're kind of their catchphrase is that they found a clue. But they say like, I found a clue. Oh, I have a big raging clue right over here. It's like, it's pretty out there. But anyway, that's unfortunately they're associated with my mind. Unfortunately, the real estate in my head, the filing cabinet, unfortunately, they're filed like right next to each other. It's like Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys, Hardly Boys.
So. I getcha. In terms of the New Yorkiness of it, I actually, even though, you know, I never actually lived in Manhattan or one of the five boroughs, mm-hmm. I mean, Jersey City, close, but not, yep. it doesn't quite work, right? I don't get that same sense. I still love the show. I can see why it would be even more appealing to folks who actually live or have lived in the city. Because, Jason, what you explained in the pitch about like having dealt with these people and recognizing the characters, that I mean, going back to that lobby scene again, like, oh my God, yeah, I can easily see all these people living in the building and each other. And the fact that they're all sad about the cat, then Tim dying, was brilliant. Yeah. Like, and that felt very, very in line with what I expect from a New York co-op.
100%.
Yeah, that definitely brought me some like flashbacks to when I lived in a co-op in New York.
Between that and the dog in the stroller, who I love that dog, by the way. I got so upset when I got to the end of episode 3 and I saw what happened to the dog. That was upsetting, yes. But he's pretty great.
Yeah.
My boss has an English bulldog too, so it's kind of nice to see English bulldogs getting some representation.
Yeah.
I think the one thing I do have an issue with, and it's not actually about the show itself technically, but it is about the image that you created to promote the pitch. Okay. Where you tried to state that this was the best show of 2021. That is a bold statement.
Okay.
I've personally got
best new show. Best new show. I don't know if I said it was new, but I'm going to say best new show.
That's okay.
I've gone on record on this podcast and saying Mayor of Easttown is the best show of all time ever. And for some reason, even though I know it's not necessarily true, I will stand by it. And I will but did you not like it?
I've seen Mayor of Easttown. I like this show better personally.
Okay. That's right. I think I can give it to you on Mayor of Easttown because I'm definitely exaggerating. I think Lupin was a little better.
I haven't seen that one.
I did enjoy Lupin. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny because I mean, even if you don't believe me, that both Margaret Lyons of the New York Times and all her friends, when they did the best of shows of 2021, didn't include this, which is surprising. But your boys at Rotten Tomatoes have your back because this was number 2 on their list, right behind WandaVision. So
there
people
you
agree
go.
With you.
Wow. Number one, because I'm sorry, I've seen WandaVision. It was fine. This is better than WandaVision.
Oh, yeah, I get those.
I don't know about that.
Speaking of fans, I mean, you know, obviously Marvel fans. I mean, Marvel fans don't like to have the love hate as much as the Star Wars fans do, but they're pretty close. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
As a Marvel swarmy, as I like to call myself, I think that, you know, I would agree with your perception, Jason, that there's WandaVision was great, you know, in its own right, but it's not the level of writing that this is.
Yeah. If you said like Hacks was rated higher, I'd be like, okay, I can buy that. Or even Mayor of Easttown, which was very good. I maybe thought, so I've watched a bunch of those, or I've watched some of, like, you ever seen Broadchurch?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, to me, Mayor of Easttown was just sort of like an American, like, it's been done, but it's been done
Pennsylvania
better.
Broadchurch?
Yeah, it's like an American, it's Pennsylvania Broadchurch. There you go.
I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
And so to me, you know, I'm like, you know, it's still good, but, you know, personally, I'm like, okay. Whereas one of the things I really liked about this was it felt wholly original to me. You know, if someone explained it to me, I would have been like, what? No, this isn't going to work. It's going to be too many clashing styles. You've got drama, you've got comedy, you've got mystery, mm-hmm. and they all work simultaneously. And it's, and to me, it's great. And, you know, I can appreciate not everyone's going to think it's the best show of 2021. But to me, like, it's hard to look at this and be like, well, this isn't good, though. Like, this is obviously very well done on multiple levels, performance, writing, directing.
But Mayor of Easttown still wins for best accent work probably of the past 10 years.
Fine. Sure.
I will die on this hill. Because I've dug myself so far that into this position.
Accent, you know, she nailed central Pennsylvania just
to a T.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally just dug myself so deep into this hole with Mayor of Easttown that there's no way I can ever backtrack out of it. Like, now I just have to defend it for the rest of my life. It's good. I see exactly what you're saying, but I have to walk the party line with Mayor of Easttown. Like, hey, I'm literally like Republicans at the January, talking about the January 6th hearings.
Like, so fair. The Wire, Mayor of Easttown. You're taking Mayor of Easttown over The Wire.
See, I have to, but I know I shouldn't.
Wow.
I know I shouldn't.
Wow. Okay. But Kate Winslet's coming back for another series now to HBO Max. So just stay tuned.
Yeah, there you go.
Looking fair forward enough. To it. I'm trying to think, like, if there was anything else I really wanted to mention here. I mean, I have to say that, you know, Mabel, because she had this, the group that she was with that was doing the investigations and whatnot, I think that, you know, she had a huge leg up on the other two as far as detective work is concerned. And I thought that was really, I thought that was really neat that she kind of brought that to the table.
Yeah, that's a good point. The way she would be sort of like the first to suggest things like, let's go through the garbage, let's do things like that. Yeah,
let's break into the apartment, let's get the package, let's get off at 8th and then walk up to the 9th floor so we can try and evade the cops. You know, that kind of stuff. It's just like, it's really smart stuff that, you know, again, I've never worked with a PI before, but I'm assuming the PIs already know this kind of stuff left and right. I saw Jessica Jones do this, you know, on Netflix series, for example, like day, you know, episode in and episode out, for example. So, by the way, I'm a bad therapist. Sorry, that was from the lineup.
Oh, that's right.
That was great. I live on 6th and take Venmo.
Now, I do have one very important question. If this was us, which character are we? They're three podcasters. We're three podcasters. So who are each of us?
Yeah, we're on a podcast talking about a show that has a podcast and follows their podcasts. Yeah, so we're definitely closing this larger, you know, nested loop of things here for sure. I like this question.
I feel like I'm curmudgeonly enough to be Steve Martin's character. I feel like that makes the most sense. I mean, also appreciate his bell pepper organization game in the fridge. Oh, that was real tight.
Agreed.
That's an interior designer's dream. That's right. Line those peppers up.
but even how, like, I love how immaculate his you see his kitchen again, through episode 4 as well. And it's just amazing how well kept that kitchen is. I'm like, everything is in its perfect place. I'm like, that's a thing of beauty right there.
All three of their apartments, though, are like a perfect representation of each of the characters. You know, you've got Martin's apartment, which is just so organized, but also a little dry and boring. You've got Martin Short's, which is like ridiculous, very gaudy, but a little tired and, you know, outdated. And then, Mabel's apartment is just a wreck.
Yes, literally. Yeah. It's disrepair. And some parts seem like they're exposed or less exposed to the interior part of the building, like, you know, wallpaper off the wall. So it's like it's very interesting to see how, like, you know, that you're trying to get a good picture of who she is, and it's kind of, she's not giving you the whole picture also. Mm. So I definitely appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm definitely like a little bit more, I'd say, like, it's funny because I have curmudgeonly instincts for certain things, like. But I wouldn't say I'm 100% curmudgeonly. So I kind of still have to be a little bit more. I take the probably a little bit of the humor from Mabel, but I'd say I'm poor. I'd say like 60 Mabel, and then 20% each of the other two. If I was to blend myself up,
you have to be Mabel because I have to be Martin Short. And yes, I have to be Martin Short because aside from the fact he's like the most hyper and all over the place.
That's true.
He's also the one, he's obsessed with having dips. And I love dips. Like, as soon as he said that, like, there's a line where he's like, you can make a meal out of them. And I was like, I do make a meal out of them.
Right. Well, but also, I think we have to note here as well that on an experience perspective, You're the one of the three of us that has done the most directing out of us by far.
That's true.
So
I never hit the big time with Splash the Musical, but yes.
Yeah. It's like I'm just waiting for them to do like an overboard musical, you know, and I try and get like, you know, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn help fund it now. I'm just waiting for it.
I mean, they did do a reboot, right?
They did. Right. They made another one. Right. Yeah, yeah. I forget who was in it. Yeah, it was, I forget. The guy who I think is the one who like loses their memory was somebody like, I'd never heard of the person. Mm-hmm. And I forget who the actress was.
Was Amy Schumer in that?
Oh, is it Amy? I got to look it up now. I'm looking it up. Overboard 2008. Oh, it came out 2018. It is Anna Faris. I had it right.
Oh, it's Anna Faris. Okay.
It's Anna Faris.
And the guy is Eugenio Derbez.
Oh, he was, I think he was in How to Be a Latin Lover, and he was delightful in that.
No.
It didn't get enough love, but it was a good movie.
Huh.
Good to know.
He also played Alejandro in Dora and the Lost City of Gold.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Interesting. Yeah, so it's pretty wild, yeah. But yeah, I think hearing the story about what happened with the unfortunate, you know, lack of working, elevating floor on the stage of Splash was pretty traumatic here.
Well, I think that's supposed to be a pretty direct reference to the Spider-Man musical.
Yep.
I thought when they were talking about an incident where an actor,
Spider-Man fell and there was like an issue mechanically, mm-hmm. and Spider-Man got like really hurt and that kind of killed the musical.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's like little nuggets like that where it's like you think that sounds ridiculous, but it's actually like straight out of real life New York City.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, great.
Even this apartment building, which if this was anywhere else, I'd say like this apartment building is ridiculous. But
oh yeah.
It was filmed at an actual, well, the exteriors at least. That's an actual New York City apartment building. There are people who actually live there.
That courtyard in the middle is redonkulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have like multiple weddings down there at the same time and you would not be it. There'd be little to no interference, I think.
Yeah. Could you picture like walking through an arch into your central courtyard to go to your apartment in New York City? That's insane. Yeah. But they even made a point because like in the first, I think it was the first episode, they made some reference like, oh, we got our apartments 30 years ago. Places like that were basically being sold for free back in the late 70s, early 80s.
True.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I've always griped about with Friends. People watch Friends and they'd be like, oh, this is ridiculous. They live in this super fancy apartment. But when Friends started, it was only the mid 90s. And there were all sorts of people who had crazy nice apartments that was like their grandmother lived there. It was rent controlled and they're paying peanuts for incredible real estate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's people like that in these apartments in New York City where they bought it for maybe not peanuts, but really cheap in the 70s and 80s. And now they live in these spectacular apartments where their hardest part, the hardest thing is, you know, being able to just pay the maintenance, which we see with a couple characters in the show.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy how, you know, that escalates, you know, in that regard. I mean, it even again, we're living right now as we record this, you know, New York City reached its highest median rent ever. Now the median rent for a two bedroom is $4,000.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a ton of money.
Although San Fran has its beat. So does the,
How much is that just Manhattan or is that all of New York City?
That's a median of all of New York City, all five boroughs.
Yeah, that's high.
It's kind of it's happening everywhere. I mean, so who knows when the bubble that is currently existing as we record this will burst? We'll see.
I think it might be bursting right now, actually. Yeah.
Patient, you know. Paul Krugman.
Yeah, thank God I have all my money in crypto. I think I'm fine. So.
Yeah, you have to make sure you get your NFTs, man.
Seriously.
I picked up Jack Dorsey's first tweet on the Real Cheap, so I think I'm set.
Oh, yeah, right. Boom, nailed it. Yeah. Done.
Nailed it.
Set for life.
Yo, you get your NFT with your ticket to VCon yet?
Jeez. One thing I have to say I did appreciate about the series even more, we touched on during the pitch, is the production meta of the how they're putting the podcast together through the course of this, because it kind of is mirroring our discussions as we're putting the podcast. That sort of added a level for me. Like I mean, Kate loved it. She watched it from beginning to end. Doesn't understand why she couldn't convince me to watch it earlier. But ultimately, yeah, I think now having done this podcast for a while now, dealing with all the production elements and then watching other people put it together themselves, I was like, wow, this is fascinating. I it adds something for me personally to enjoy it on another level. But you know,
I totally agree, because like, you know, people don't think about certain production elements. You know, again, we're all, you know, recording in different parts of our respective places and whatnot, and and so this is like we're not in the closet, so to speak, most of us at the moment. But you know, we for all we know, that we could be, you know.
But yeah, overall, I'm going to close this out, especially with season two already in full swing. I'll definitely be getting through this whole thing. This was a good time. Thank you for suggesting this one.
Yeah.
And
appreciate it. And
maybe now that you've convinced me to watch this show, which I was avoiding, maybe I'll finally dig myself out of that hole defending Mayor of Easttown and accept that other shows might be better. I'm not promising anything, but it could happen. Leaving the door open.
It's in the realm of possibility, but not... They're not probable, so I got it. Yeah, I mean,
what about you, Dan?
Think of it this way: as long as none of us are going to be, you know, dickier than Steve Carell in The Office, I think we're going to be fine.
Oh yeah, that was a great line.
Would you? Okay. That is a question. Would you be sad if Steve Carell died in The Office? If Michael Scott from The Office died, would you be sad?
So sad. Is he so sad? leaving the show was upsetting.
That was your boss, if your boss was Michael Scott, and one day you show up to work, they're like, "Yeah, he's gone. He's done."
Oh well, that's different. If he was my boss and I was on the show, do I still have to deal with Ryan? Do I still have to deal with BJ Novick's character?
Yeah.
Oh, crap. Yes. All right. Yeah. No. Then I'm very upset.
No. Well, clearly, nine. If that happens, I think it's at that point you want to get kidnapped by mercenaries. At that point, right?
Yes, please. That'd be great. Black Lagoon, me, please.
I like using Michael Scott though as the Mendoza line for like how right. obnoxious is like. Do I like them? Yes. Are they too obnoxious or adorably obnoxious? Right. Michael Scott.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, you know, where things are going. And I think, like I said, episode four for me was like another kind of gave more insight into Steve Martin's character a lot in my mind. So I think that, you know, from here, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out across the board and, you know, what is lurking for us in that final episode of season one.
Great. Great. And nine, it didn't ruin it now that you've actually seen the end of it and you were watching these first few episodes?
No, getting older has definitely impacted my memory. So it hasn't ruined anything at all. It's just thanks to age, probably drinking, and maybe some other random health issues that I'm just not aware of right now. Nothing's been ruined.
Oh. Oh, man. The benefits of unhealthy living, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. It's always the first time I've seen the show.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing I want to point out here is that I really loved how they portrayed each of them walking back towards the building as their kind of intro in the first episode. Mm. I really appreciate that a lot because, again, New Yorkers are always walking. You know, you always hear like, you know, even Trevor Noah, you know, he would always on his comedy special, he was talking about people in New York. He's like, "I'm walking here." You know, and like that was very quintessentially New York, because you always see people in New York shows, Sex and the City, Broad City, doesn't matter, you know, what show is set in New York, you always see these characters walking. And I thought that was like really great that they chose to use that as the modus to introduce them.
Definitely worked. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
That's what we thought. Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.